Welcome back to the iHeart Indie Show, where we interview your favorite indie game developers. Today, we're going to speak to Matthias, the sole developer on the puzzle platformer slash visual novel, Evan's Remains. We're going to talk about marketing, we're going to talk about game developing, and as always, a fun little tidbit at the end.
Hi, everybody. I'm Matthias. I'm an indie game developer who recently launched a game called Evan's Remains on Steam and on consoles. It came out recently on June 11th, and that's pretty much everything you should know about me.
Are you Argentinian?
I am Argentinian, yes.
Are you in Argentina?
Yes, currently I am. I was born here, so I pretty much lived here my whole life. Currently I'm here.
How is the indie scene in Argentina?
It's pretty small. I would say almost non-existent. But, you know, we are lucky to have internet and everything, which is a pretty unlimited source of information. So nowadays, luckily, you are not limited to the place you are born. Of course, you at least have to have a minimum of equipment to work on games like a somewhat decent PC and everything. But yeah, even though the indie scene is small, I can still learn or interact with as many folks as I'd like from all over the world.
Right. It's a small world, especially with the internet. Is.
Exactly.
So are you the sole developer on the game?
Yeah, I am. But I did have a lot of help from other people, like my publisher, for example, who funded part of the project and also helped a ton with marketing and the Kickstarter campaign. I also got a little hand from another video game studio from Argentina who I'm friends with, and that gave me a hand with little animations or some backgrounds, some music here and there. So even though for the most part I was kind of doing this as a solo dev, I did have a good chunk of external help, which that helped me a lot, because if I were completely alone on this, it wouldn't have been possible, really, because, you know, doing everything by yourself, it's just not doable at all.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, the person who created Stardew Valley, I know he was the sole developer, but I would like to know how much help he got, you know, with the music and the artwork and stuff, because I can only imagine how difficult that is.
Yeah, I know he was just one guy who did pretty much everything, and it was like a 5-year development. So yeah, I can't imagine how people, like, how do you keep your brain healthy, you know, because that's, you know, yeah, because when you go on a journey like that alone, the main problem is not really technical, psychological, you know, it's like it prevent like keeping your mind from going crazy.
Mm-hmm. Did you experience any burnout when creating this game?
Yeah, a lot of, you know, even though development was quote unquote short, there were a lot of times, even now, I'm kind of burned out because of release and everything. Mm-hmm. I still have to keep working, but yeah, release has been like the most burnout of all burnouts.
No
because
kidding.
Everything kind of, yeah, gets the its climax there, and you, I don't know, it's a ton of work that just gets that you have to solve problem after problem. Mm-hmm. But I'm still happy about making games, you know. I love making games. I want to keep doing this. So even though it's kind of hard sometimes, it's also very gratifying. So it's fun at the same time, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, I have a really tiny, tiny game that I programmed myself, and it's I wouldn't even call it like a real game, but it does exactly what I wanted to do, and it was very gratifying.
Send me the link, please.
Yeah. I will.
Yeah, you know, games are like that. Even the most tiny, tiny, tiny game that somebody could see and say, you know, this game should have been simple to make, you know, but no, there's no game that is easy to make, you know. That's kind of the the hard truth of making games.
Is this your first game?
No, it's not games in the past, but it is the most, the largest one, and it is my first commercial one. Did plenty of games in the past, smaller ones. This was the most challenging one because there were a lot of things that I didn't have previous experience with. So it was quite challenging, but I was able to meet every deadline on time, which was kind of surprising given how normal it is for games to get delayed, you know?
Yeah. The games that you were creating, because this is not your first game, when was the point that you were like, okay, this is going to be the project that I actually try to publish?
My idea with Evans Remains, at the time I was doing a demo that I spent like a whole year working outside of my daily job. And my idea was to make this somewhat polished vertical slice slash demo that I could pitch to some publisher or in some way get some funding to actually finish this whole thing. So that's what was like the first stepping stone. I said to myself that I wanted to make like this quote unquote a small part of a big bigger project, and I would try to like sell it. After that, I was able to meet Whitethorn Digital and my publisher, who helped me to fund it and to make the Kickstarter campaign. And we were lucky enough to complete the campaign and everything and publish the game, and we made it. But my first approach was to do the demo, you know, because if I made the demo, but then I failed to pitch it, I would have just killed the project right there and moved to another thing, you know.
So I'm guessing the part that you demoed were the puzzles, like the platforming puzzle style.
You mean the demo content?
Yeah.
The demo of the game was pretty much the first hour of the game, more or less. It's I don't know if, because when we did the Steam summer, the game was featured in the Steam summer festival some months ago, and we uploaded the demo there, and that demo was pretty much the same demo that we put in the Kickstarter campaign, and the same demo I used to pitch the game to Whitethorn.
Putting up that demo, how important was that for the success of the game?
Well, I think it was the turning point, because even though when you upload a demo and like you are kind of nobody and you just upload a demo, nobody, like you don't get like tons of downloads or anything, like nothing really happens, you know. But the thing is that the demo serves as like a small test to a publisher or an investor. It's like a small test that says, hey, I did this, I could make this full scale if you gave me money. It's like you're proving to someone else that you can make the game, and this is like a tiny taste of what the full product could be like. So that's the important of doing the demo or a vertical slice, you know. It's this showing that you could do this full scale if you were given the opportunity or the money or whatever.
Yeah. So did the demo come before the publisher approached you, or did you approach a publisher? Like how did that work?
I actually did the demo all by myself mostly, and there was like no publisher. I said to myself, first I'm going to make this demo. I'm going to make this demo as polished as I can, as beautiful as I can, with a cliffhanger at the end or whatever. And I'm going to try to pitch that to several publishers to see if any one of them is interested in funding this. You know, that was my objective. So I tried to pitch it to several publishers during a conference at my country, which was kind of a disaster because none of the publishers were interested, and I was thinking of just moving to the next thing and killing the project. But some days after that, Whitethorn Digital contacted me via Facebook, and they told me they had found the game on itch, the demo, and they were interested in it. And we started to talk there, and I said to them, okay, I'm going to need some money if I want to finish this. And they say, well, we can give you some money. We will do a Kickstarter. So everything kind of went from there, you know?
Wow. I find it hard that you could present this game at a conference and nobody is interested. I mean, because like it looks, it's so well polished. It feels good. And the puzzle mechanism that you have in there, it's so simple, but it's so intriguing. Like there were some puzzles where I was scratching my head for a second, and it's such a simple system, but how do you create something so engaging from such a simple system? And not only that, like the game looked beautiful, like with the reflections in the water of the character and just the overall feel of the game, and even the story, the way that the story is presented, I can't believe people passed this up.
Thanks. Well, yeah, it's funny because it is like that, you know, nowadays making indie games is hard because no matter how good you think your product is or how much hard you thought you put into the game, if no one is interested in the game or in the initial glance that the game gives, there's like not much you can do. I mean, it's like that, you know. It was kind of devastating hard, you know, going to the event and getting like kind of rejected, but it's part of being and not only being an indie, but making games in general, you know, or, you know.
I would say this, just part of life in general. You're going to get rejected so much.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It what I'm trying to say, it's kind of just part of the process. So yeah, even though it's hard, you kind of have to get used to it, because after rejection, eventually you will have like the mini successes. And so that's how it works, you know?
How did you come up with the idea of the puzzles? Like you jump on the platform and it could disappear, like that system.
Okay, I remember that initially I wanted the mechanic to be a lot more complicated. I was thinking about rotating platforms and all sort of complicated stuff that I wasn't actually able to do it at the time because my limited programming skills. So I started trying to do that, but I wasn't able to. So when I was kind of testing the game, it was an interesting bug happened that when the character left off a platform, the platform disappeared. So then the idea came to me that what happened if every platform that the player jumps off disappears, and then you have a switch that kind of inverts every combination you did. So it kind of was born from an accident. And then after that, I of course, started to implement the other mechanics, such as the teleport, the jump booster, and etc. But that initial mechanic actually was born from an accident.
You wouldn't believe how many people have heard that the core part of their game came from an accident. So I'm guessing you were just playing around with a prototype of some type before. Which came first? Did the style and the story of the game come first, or did the puzzle part come first?
I'm really a story guy. I always love stories in games. So I knew what I wanted this game to kind of taste like or feel like from the start, even though I wasn't actually aware of all the details. I did knew how I wanted the feeling to be. I remember that right from the start, I wanted the game to be located in a really beautiful beach. I don't know why, but that was like the what I was imagining at the time. So I couldn't get that out of my head. So right from the start, I knew that the game was going to be on a beach or this kind of really beautiful place. I didn't know it was going to have puzzles and a story, and I wanted a girl as a protagonist and etc. So I had kind of like the vision. So that kind of was the first thing that came out of my mind. And yeah, after that, I made a prototype, but everything it was kind of a mess, you know. I didn't like first thought of about the story and the puzzles, but it was like doing everything at once, you know?
Yeah. I'm going to ask you something, and maybe I might be repeating myself a little bit, but when did you realize that, okay, this system that I have where you jump on the platform and it could disappear, when did you think to yourself, okay, this is where the base of the gameplay is going to come in?
I think it happened right after I encountered that accident, because I thought to myself, okay, this is interesting. Can I make a puzzle with this? So then I jumped in to do that. I tried to make just one puzzle with that mechanic, and I find out that, yeah, I could make puzzles with that mechanic. So I started to make more and more puzzles and tried different versions of the same mechanic. And also I tried mechanics that were scrapped from the game. So it was pretty much, okay, I found this interesting thing. Let me see if I can make puzzles with this. And I could. So I said to myself, okay, I'm gonna go with this.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very interesting system. How difficult was it to create engaging puzzles?
It was one of the hardest parts of the game. I always say that puzzle design, although it looks kind of easy when you just play them or you see them at first glance, and I don't think people are aware of how much work it is behind the design, even though how simple it looks, but it was really one of the most challenging aspects of doing the game, because one tiny puzzle would take me several days to, or even more, to just get it right, you know, because even when you think you finished it, you go to test it and you find out that players break it or find a way to solve the puzzle that wasn't intended. So you have to kind of scrap it again and work it again. So it's kind of this jarring process, you know?
Yeah. I've heard this before from Tyler Gliel, and he said the same thing, like to create, basically the more he used the system, the better he became at creating good puzzles.
Exactly.
Yeah, but like all of your puzzles were just really good, like from the very beginning. And like the way how you taught the player how to use it, I mean, it was just really, really well done. Was the story completely written by you?
First of all, thank you. I'm glad you enjoy the puzzles. Yeah, the story was completely written by me. It was my publisher helped me with the edition, because, you know, my English it's not perfect. But yeah, the whole story, everything was just me.
Okay. Yeah, it was a really good story. It had me all the way through. I just personally, for me, I mean, I don't want to be a critic on the story, because the story was just so good. But at the end, I felt like it was, I was told the moral of the story, and I didn't want to be told the moral of the story. That was my only tiny gripe, but that's a me thing.
I completely agree with you. You know, it was kind of hard, because it was my first time like trying to tell this full story with characters. And even though I attempted writing in the past, this was like the same as with the game. It was like the largest, it was like the first time that I did it in this scale, you know? So it was hard, and I'm aware that the storytelling has some flaws, you know, but I'm hopefully trying to like make it so much better for next games, because I learned a ton during this.
I have to tell you that I've never played a visual novel game before. Mm-hmm. The story in this game really had me hooked, and the way that you had just a few characters and how they interacted with each other, it was just really intimate. And I really got to know the characters. And I've just never had that before, besides in a book. So because of this, I'm actually going to look at some visual novel games now. Because I was never into them. I actually played this because I saw the puzzle. And I was like, that's interesting. So the visual novel style, was that something that you anticipated? Or how did that come up?
Thanks a lot. I'm glad you had a good time with the story. Yeah, actually, I was always a big fan of classic Japanese graphic adventure games. So the inspiration of trying to tell kind of this convoluted story that you usually see in those kind of games was right there from the start. You know, I knew I wanted to have like these big portraits of the characters. And so, yeah, that was pretty much at the start of the development. I knew I wanted to have something really, really similar to that, mm-hmm. you know?
What was mm-hmm. it like working with a publisher?
It was really good, you know, because they helped a ton with the console promotions, with the Kickstarter, with sending keys to reviewers and helping handling press or bug reports. So they were a ton of help, and that kind of helps you a lot, even more so when you're alone doing this. You know, it's at the end of the day, it helps you to know that you have a partner with you in this, like you're not completely alone, and that's kind of a relief. So it was a big help, and I'm really glad I partnered with them.
Wow. I had no idea publishers would help that much. I always thought that a publisher is just somebody that's there, a bigger guy, just kind of dominating over the little guy. So that's interesting to hear.
Yeah, I think it depends, you know, because I don't have that much experience working with publishers, because I know there are like tons of different publishers and there are tons of different contracts and agreements, you know. I was lucky enough to work with Whitethorn, who are great people, and they helped a ton, you know. So, but I don't know how other publishers are, honestly.
So when you programmed this game, did you program it for one specific system? Like what language did you use? What programs did you use?
I programmed it in GameMaker 2, which has a native language called GML. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty similar to C, yeah. You know. I just programmed for PC, and then I send the source project to Whitethorn, and they would be the ones to be in charge of doing the Switch version and the Xbox version, etc.
Oh, that's cool. That's a big help.
Yeah, because you know, console porting is pretty hard. Not so much because of the technical issues, but because of all the bureaucracy that there is in between. You know, you need a lot of certificates and to pay a lot of boring paperwork. You know, it's like really a jarring process.
Yeah, I could only imagine. I've heard about one guy. There's a game that I really love called Super Rad Rayman, mm-hmm. something like that. I love that game so much. And that game deserves to be on the Nintendo Switch eShop. And he got rejected. And I don't know what the procedures are like, because I know I've played games on Switch that are just ridiculously worse. I mean, ridiculously. And I could only imagine it might have been like a paperwork problem or something along those lines.
Yeah, it's always like you send the first proposed and it gets rejected, and it says that you have to solve these tiny issues, and then you send it back, and you have to keep like sending it over until it gets approved, mm-hmm. you know.
As far as other marketing strategies went, is there anything else you use besides Kickstarter and the publisher? Let me just extend that question a little bit. So like, what other marketing strategies did you use, and was did you find one of those ways better than another way? Did you find like you wasted time trying to promote something a certain way?
Right from the start of development, I was really active on Twitter, and I was kind of focused on making Twitter my main marketing profile. So I always post GIFs, and I got better at making GIFs of the game, which I think is a really powerful tool. Was pretty much using Twitter a lot, posting a lot of GIFs, the Kickstarter. Also, I set up a full mail list from journalists who I researched and I thought that could be interested in the game when it launched, so I could give them a review copy. But besides that, I don't think there were more specific things rather than doing all of those earlier mentioned things constantly, you know. I would say that one of the hardest aspects of marketing this game was that nobody's interested in playing a platformer these days, which was kind of hard because I felt like I was fighting an uphill battle, you know.
Are you serious?
Next time...
This is news to me. People are no longer playing platformers like that? Well, I'm in a strange boat.
They still play. Yeah, but the thing is, because it works like this, you know, indie games or games in general are getting like really, really saturated, you know. Mm. So as an indie creator, your best bet is to make something unique, starting from the mechanic, you know. And when you present a puzzle platformer in 2020, it's kind of, there are a lot of platformer games that came out before and did it better. So it's kind of hard. Even though, because it also looks at first glance that you're not doing anything unique, even though I feel my game, even though it's a puzzle platformer / visual novel, it still has its uniqueness, you know. But I plan to be much more original in my next game, starting from the mechanic, you know.
Mm-hmm. Is it wrong that I want a game filled with just the puzzles that you have in this game?
No, in fact, there is a lot of people that want that as well. That was kind of surprising.
Yeah, they were really, really good. I honestly can't stress that enough. I play a lot of puzzle platformers. That's my favorite genre, period. And the puzzles were just really good.
Thanks a lot. It makes me really happy.
All right. So I have one final question.
Of course.
Do you know what a hidden gem is? As far as video games go.
Well, yeah. Hidden gem is this... really good game that nobody seems to have heard of, but it's you know, a hidden gem, you know. Yes. It's kind of this thing that's good, but not everybody knows. Precisely. About it.
So I want to know, what is your favorite hidden gem? Or if you have multiple.
It has to be like a really, really, really hidden gem? Or
no, anything.
Like nobody have heard of that? Or
if you consider it a hidden gem, say it.
Okay, well, I consider the Zero Escape saga to be hidden gem because even though it has its cult following, I don't see it getting the price it deserves, you know. Mm. Especially in 999 the game. I don't know if you know about the game.
No.
It's a visual novel, but you know, it has one of the most amazing storylines I've ever experienced in a video game. And it touches really interesting topics. And the game, it wasn't a total failure, but like nobody knows about the game. Unless you like visual novels, of course, if you like them, you're going to know about the game. But generally speaking, mainstream speaking, it's not really known.
Interesting.
I would say that's my hidden gem.
Oh, I'm definitely going to have to check that out now.
Yeah, keep in mind, it's like really a visual novel, a lot of text kind of thing, but it has a really amazing story.
Mm. I know I said that was the final question. I do have two more tiny questions.
Of course.
So one of them was, how did you come up with the $7.99 price tag? Or is it $6.99?
That was, we decided that with my publisher because... you know, the game is, it's not that long. It's quite short. It's quite linear. It's pixel art, which is also really saturated style. Mm-hmm. These days. So, you know, pricing it like 10 or above that, for me, it's like, it didn't feel right. So I think like the $7 price feels okay, given the experience the game gives you.
And how did you get into programming to begin with?
That's a funny question because I actually started as a digital artist. And when I started the game, Evans Remains, I started like drawing everything myself, and I wasn't really that good at programming, But I knew that if I wanted to make games, I had to like get my hands dirty, you know? So I just started, you know, like that, like forcing myself to learn how to program this thing, because if I didn't make it, nobody would do it for me, you know?
Yeah. Was there like a program that you used to start off with? A type of language?
Well, I always used Game Maker because I feel pretty comfortable with it. And I find it that you have a lot of tutorials on YouTube, a lot of community to learn. I tried Unity, but I didn't like it. So it was pretty much choosing the platform that I was most comfortable with and just going from that.
Interesting. All right. Well, unless if there's anything else you would like to say, this is it.
Thank you, Ryan, for inviting me. I had a really good time. That's it.
Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to talk to me.
No problem.
This was fun.